This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. The UN Atomic Agency says there is no evidence North Korea has stopped its nuclear activities. A report by the International Atomic Energy Agency said the continuation and further development of Pyongyang's nuclear program is a cause for grave concern. Bruce Bennett is senior defense analyst at the RAND Corporation.
President Trump agreed to meet with Kim Jong-un because Kim Jong-un said he was going to abandon his nuclear weapons. This is a classical North Korea bait and switch. Kim Jong-un promised one thing. He's now refusing to do any kind of denuclearization. And after his meeting in Singapore, he went home to North Korea, and according to several sources I have, he's briefed the senior elites that he was never going to give up his nuclear weapons, that they were key to regime survival.
Monday, President Trump told Reuters he believes the North has taken specific steps toward denuclearization, and he would most likely meet again with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Mr. Trump briefly touched on the matter during a campaign appearance late Tuesday in Charleston, West Virginia.
And we're doing well with North Korea. You know, these guys, it's been, 3 months since I left? These guys say, what's happening with North Korea? Hey, folks, they've been doing this stuff for 75 years, 3 months. What happened? I can tell you, and I got along very well with Kim Jong-un, and really well.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Tuesday announced sanctions on two Russian shipping companies and six vessels accused of transferring refined petroleum products to North Korean vessels in violation of U.N. sanctions. Russia's Interfax news agency quotes Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov as saying the Taliban insurgency plans to take part in Afghan peace talks in Moscow September 4. He said the Kremlin has invited a dozen countries, including the U.S. It has been following a series of Taliban attacks across the country. This is VOA News. In Venezuela, drastic new economic policies went into effect Tuesday, including a 96% devaluation of the currency, the Bolivar, in an effort to stem out-of-control inflation. The government of President Nicolas Maduro has cut five zeros from the currency and pegged it to a state-backed cryptocurrency, the Petro. Inflation in Venezuela has topped 82,000% as of last month. The plan includes a more than 3,000% increase in the minimum wage. The opposition called for a day-long halt in commercial activity Tuesday in protest. But Mary Catajon said paralyzing the country isn't the solution because it means workers won't eat. Paul Manafort, who served briefly as campaign manager for President Trump's 2016 campaign, was found guilty Tuesday of 8 of 18 charges against him in his federal tax and bank fraud trial. At the same time, Mr. Trump's attorney, Mark Cohen, pled guilty to 8 counts, including campaign finance violations and tax evasion. The president reacted as he left for a campaign appearance.
I feel very badly for Paul Manafort. Again, he worked for Bob Dole. He worked for Ronald Reagan. He worked for many, many people. This is the way it ends up. And it was not the original mission, believe me. It was something very much different. So, had nothing to do with Russian collusion. We continue the witch hunt.
Both Manafort and Cohen faced jail time. Prosecutors gave no sign. Mr. Trump himself is implicated in any wrongdoing. The U.S. Tuesday expressed deep disappointment by El Salvador's decision to break diplomatic ties with Taiwan, opting for recognition of mainland China. Washington said it's reviewing its relationship with San Salvador. In India's southern Kerala state, more than 1 million people are living in camps following days of heavy monsoon rains that caused widespread flooding. K.H. Shahabas is a camp volunteer.
People came from across this whole Alua area. People count was about 10,000. We have faced a lot of problems, including water problems, electricity problems, food problems. We have served one food for the 5 people.
State authorities said they needed to borrow more than $1 billion for reconstruction. The disaster claimed nearly 400 lives. In Indonesia, an ethnic Chinese Buddhist woman from North Sumatra has been sentenced to 18 months in jail under blasphemy laws for complaining about loud mosque calls to prayer. The former Chinese governor of Jakarta was jailed last year for insulting the holy book Quran and lost his re-election bid. Two journalists in Cambodia were freed from jail Tuesday, a day after a land rights activist was pardoned in the wake of the widely criticized election that extended Prime Minister Hun Sen's 33-year grip on power. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court opens hearings today on the July 30th presidential election challenge.
On the basis of the evidence that we've placed before the court, we seek in the main relief to the effect that the court must declare the proper winner, and that proper winner is my client.
Thabani Mpofu is the lawyer for opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. We'll get analysis on today's court hearing. A retired Ugandan Supreme Court justice will explain why he thinks hope for a lasting peace in South Sudan is an illusion. And Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission chief rejects a petition to reveal President George Weah's declared assets.
The body of laws that give LCC the power to collect asset declaration documents is a clearly that these documents should be made available upon court order. So what we are doing is obeying and obliging to the law that gives us the mandate to collect asset declaration.
Councillor James Verdier is chair of Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission. We'll hear from a civil society group that petitioned the commission for the release of the assets. And Kenya's demolition of buildings comes under increasing criticism. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court will today, Wednesday, hear a petition brought by the country's main opposition movement for Democratic Change Alliance seeking an overturn of the July 30th presidential election, which the Electoral Commission said was won by incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa. As Columbus Mavunga reports, both lawyers are hopeful of a victory.
Nelson Chamisa of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance wants the country's highest court to nullify the 50.8% victory of President Emmerson Mnangagwa in the July election. The 40-year-old politician says the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, which gave him 44% of the vote, rigged the polls for the ruling ZANU-PF party. Here is Thabani Mpofu, the opposition lawyer.
We wouldn't have come to court if we thought the courts would not give a fair judgment. And on the basis of the evidence that we've placed before the court, we seek in the main relief to the effect that the court must declare the proper winner. And that proper winner is my client. In the alternative, we seek that there be another election that complies with the Constitution of Zimbabwe.
Louis Uriri, the lawyer for President Mnangagwa, is equally confident of convincing the Constitutional Court this Wednesday to throw away the opposition election petition.
It is absolutely without merit. It is unfounded factually and legally. It is political stuntsmanship playing out in the courts, such stuntsmanship being packaged in pure political rhetoric, which rhetoric is supported by conjectural mathematical extrapolations, which are based on data of dubious sources, which is accepted to be incorrect, and every aspect of it is based on inadmissible evidence. They've avoided the direct evidence of the content of the ballot box. There's simply no evidence.
Tensions have been building up in the run-up to this Wednesday hearing. On Tuesday, leader of the pro-President Emmerson Mnangagwa Veterans of Liberation War, Victor Matema Danda, accused the U.S. of leading the international community in interfering in Zimbabwe's politics.
The international community led by America are portraying that this election was not run properly. They are condemning ZEC, and now they are looking at the courts to wait for a result and say, this is wrong or this is right. But we are not going to take American law to determine how we run Zimbabwe. The president-elect won by 50.8%, full stop. We know how we voted. We don't need America's approval.
In return, the opposition MDC Alliance has said the threats by war veterans to take up arms against the U.S. to defend President Mnangagwa's July 30th election victory was meant to intimidate the judges of the Constitutional Court ahead of the election petition hearing this Wednesday. Columbus Mavunga for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Harare.
As Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court begins a hearing today on the challenge to last month's presidential election results, the U.S. Embassy in Harare has issued a security alert urging all U.S. citizens in the Zimbabwe capital to be vigilant and to stay away from flashpoints. As Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports, today's hearing hinges on a technicality that could derail the opposition's case.
Zimbabwe's opposition MDC Alliance leader Nelson Chamisa finally gets his day in court Wednesday when the full constitutional court sits to decide on whether or not the July 30th election was rigged in favor of incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Legal experts are warning that the odds are stacked against Chamisa. In 2017, Kenya became the first African nation and only third in the world after Ukraine, Maldives, and Austria to have courts annul an election result. But constitutional law expert and former presidential candidate Lovemore Maduku of the National Constitutional Assembly says Chamisa's case may be dead on arrival.
The law says you must file within 7 days. But there's also another law which says that you must file and serve your documents on the other party within 7 days of. So what happened in this case, which is not disputed, is that some of the respondents, they only receive their court papers after 7 days.
Maduku says if the court wants, it can also refuse to grant the applicants room to negotiate. Despite that technicality, which the Electoral Act gives the courts the power to dismiss a case, Chamisa says he is confident that his legal team would overturn the electoral fraud he claims was engineered by ZEC in favor of Mr. Mnangagwa. Douglas Mwonzora, one of Chamisa's legal team members, argues that the allegation of late submission is a ploy by Mnangagwa's ZANU-PF party to circumvent justice. He says Chamisa will ultimately prevail.
Unfortunately, this aspect was overdwelled with in the press, and it may have misled members of the public. The jury is still very much out there. I think that it is not going to be as easy a point as some people have said. I've read two sets of arguments which are in the public domain anyway, and it appears to me that it is going to be a very, very hot issue.
The legal team representing Mnangagwa, however, is confident that the MDC Alliance case will not see the light of day. ZANU-PF Secretary for Legal Affairs, Paul Mangwana, expects the hearing not to go far.
We expect this matter to be dealt with most probably on preliminary grounds, which are quite strong, whether or not there is a valid application before the court. That is the main issue which should be deliberated upon by the court before they get into many other issues.
The constitutional hearing would be recorded live by the Zimbabwe state broadcaster for the world to see. According to Zimbabwe's constitution, the constitutional court has 14 days from the day a presidential challenge is lodged to render a decision. That day is up on Friday, August 24th. Reporting for VOA Zimbabwe Service, I'm Blessing Zulu in Washington.
There's optimism in the air these days that South Sudan's most recent peace agreement, signed this month in Khartoum, will finally end that country's 5-year civil war. For example, a ceasefire made possible by the agreement appears to be holding, but for retired Ugandan Supreme Court Justice George Kanyi Hamba, the idea that peace will finally come to South Sudan is an illusion. He says the leadership credentials of principal mediators like President Omar al-Bashir of Sudan and Yoweri Museveni of Uganda, coupled with deep-seated differences between President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, make lasting peace almost unattainable.
My view is that the people who are involved in those negotiations, the president of Sudan, our own president, and the rather antagonist of Southern Sudan, when you look on the facts and the circumstances and their background, there is no way they can reconcile such in a way that was reported in the newspaper.
Well, Justice, it's simple the way you put it, but it's not because political situation in these two countries may not be right. It doesn't mean that they cannot negotiate peace. Are you saying that it's impossible?
It is impossible, yes. You see, you can only negotiate, be reconciled by people you believe in. You have trust in, you have confidence in their own systems and their own principles. But if you don't, as most Southern Sudanese don't, and the suspicion between the current leader and the opposition, they are in one room, makes room their supporters are fighting. How can that be a basis for any meaningful reconciliation?
So you're saying maybe it's a scenario where the child copies what they see the parents do?
Yes. Take an example. They say the Sudanese leader is wanted by the international community. He could be arrested anywhere. Our own president here has totally ignored our constitutional issues. We are in every by-election. In every election, people die. Then, if you look at the deep-rooted suspicions between the Sudanese leaders, then you say, how can this be an environment where peace and reconciliation can be negotiated? Absolutely fiction.
But right now, Justice, it seems that the current peace process is holding or making some progress. But let's take your article. What do you think would it take to bring about lasting peace in South Sudan?
Obviously, we need peace in Sudan. Most of all, we Ugandans crave for it. But I am saying the environment in which it was announced that President Bashir, President Museveni, and those two antagonistic leaders in southern Sudan behave towards each other is not conducive to reconciliation. It's a fact that I am stating personally. But if you have other evidence that it will work, let me know. This is not the first time it has been announced that there is peace in southern Sudan. Within days, war breaks out again because of these suspicions. And what I'm saying, you cannot believe in a person you don't believe in. You cannot respect what he's suggesting, knowing that even in his own country, like in Sudan, the international community wants that leader. It's just common sense.
Justice, it's always nice to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
You're most welcome.
Retired Ugandan Supreme Court Justice George Kanyihamba was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Today's Wednesday, August 22nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission, the LACC, has turned down a request filed by a civil society group to make public the assets of President George Weah and his vice president, Jua Howard Taylor. President Weah declared his assets last month, but Liberians were told that in order to know the details of the assets, they had to go to court. The request made by the People Action Network also demanded copies of the assets of legislators and cabinet members, but Anti-Corruption Commission Chief Counselor James Verdier says while he supports the public's right to know the assets of public officials, only a court order can make that possible.
The body of laws that mandated the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission to access or receive asset declaration documents from public officials stated clearly in 10.2 that when these documents are collected by LACC, they will be made available to the public by a court order. LACC is not mandated to release these information to the public except on the order of a court. We also have another law that is the Freedom of Information Act that says any public document should be made available to the public on demand. So these are two conflicting laws. However, the body of laws that give LACC the power to collect asset declaration documents states clearly that these documents can or should be made available upon court order. So what we are doing is obeying and obliging to the law that gives us the mandate to collect asset declaration. We are not holding any document or concealing documents from the public. I believe that documents should be made available to the public, but the laws that give us the authority to collect asset declaration says they should be made available to the public based on court order. And that's what we are conforming to.
Counselor, if you don't have the power to release them, as it is in this case, how much power do you have?
When we receive asset declaration documents, they're for us to use in our investigation to determine or to measure public officials' performance during their tenure in office. regarding the acquisition is for us to investigate. We're not acting on behalf of the public to retrieve them or to get them from the public official and then publicize them. No, that's not what the law says. What we do is that we collect these documents and undertake a verification process. Then we also use it to investigate to match the performance against what they have before they came to public office and what they have after leaving public office or during their tenure in public office. If there's any acts of corruption or anything, then we use these information and these documents to pursue them. We are not under obligation to release them. However, the law, like I said again, requires a court order. If we do receive a court order to release asset declaration document of any public official, we would be glad to do so.
I'm assuming, Councillor, that the people of Liberia are your audience. So I would think that they should be of utmost concern to you in terms of their right to know what the assets are.
I agree with you, absolutely. And that is why we also act as agents of the people. The LCC serves as the eyes and the ears of the people. So we act on behalf of the public. However, if any member of the public wishes to access or acquire these documents, the National Code of Conduct in 10.2 says it must be based on a court order.
I appreciate very much talking with you, Councillor.
I appreciate you getting in touch with me too, James. Thank you very much.
That was Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission Chief Counselor James Verdier speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. The People Action Network, a civil society group in Liberia, says it plans to file a writ of mandamus to the country's Supreme Court to force the release of President George Weah's declared assets and those of other government officials. This came after the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission turned down a request to make public those assets. The commission said only a court order can make possible the release of any official's assets. But Rufus Nouvel, executive director of the People Action Network, says the LACC has been interpreting the law erroneously. He says Liberians have the right to know the assets of their public officials as part of the fight against corruption.
We requested the disclosure of the assets declared by government officials consistent with the FOI law, that's the Freedom of Information Act, which provides that the public will always have the right to review public records in the possession of institutions or agencies sponsored or funded by government, and also consistent with our right to public information as indicated in Article 15C of the Constitution. Now he's using the Code of Conduct Section 10.2 to deny us our right provided under the Constitution and the Freedom of Information Act to see or to know what was declared by public officials. And we believe that the essence, the true intent of the Code of Conduct is for transparency. And it is needless to declare if the declaration will be a top government secret. And that's why we insist that we will take other measures to get the information, because as citizens of this country and as a civil society institution, we have a right to ensure transparency.
Well, the law, the chairman cites, goes on to say that all such declaration, like the assets you are requesting, shall be accessible to both the public employer and the general public upon a court order. Why did you not go to the court?
Well, we didn't go to the court because if you read further in that act, a court order is required for investigative purposes. You need the information to investigate or to take other legal actions, of course, then a court order will be required. If I said Mr. Botti declared my property as his property to the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission, then I'm claiming rights to a property. So there is a dispute of ownership. In that case, a court order will be required to have access to such information because you're building a case. Our request was not based on investigation or any collecting of evidence. The Freedom of Information Act is very clear. You know, when you become a public servant, you have a certain scope of privacy, but that is not absolute. If you are managing the resources of the country, you cannot take an absolute privacy as it relates to your work.
When you talk about further remedies, what options do you think are available to you?
We are going to the Supreme Court on a writ of mandamus. A writ of mandamus is a special remedial writ that compels an agency of government to perform official duty. We believe that the refusal of the LACC to give us the information is a dereliction of duty. They have failed to perform their duty. So we go into the Supreme Court right after the administrative process to petition the court for a writ of mandamus, a special writ that will compel the administrative agency, like in this case the LACC or the GAC, to do what they are statutorily designed to do.
again, why are you so interested in President Weah's assets?
Liberia has a history of corruption. People, public service in this country, they take government as an opportunity to turn to millionaires. They exploit the poor people. They get very rich after a few years in public office. Now, the assets declaration was put in the code of conduct so that the public can also comment and vet and analyze your work. So if you become president of Liberia and you own one house, at the end of your presidency, if you own 500 houses, of course, they will raise flare because the cumulative effect of your salary over 6 months can now reach to 500 or 1,000 houses. The essence of that law is to put a normal line on your economic growth so that the public and everybody can see so as to prevent corruption.
Rufus Newville is Executive Director of the People Action Network of Liberia. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Criticism is building in Kenya's capital over a wave of forced evictions and the demolition of buildings that authorities deem illegal. Rael Ombuo reports from Nairobi.
Last month, Kenyan authorities demolished hundreds of unlicensed structures in Kibera, one of Africa's largest slums, to make way for road construction. Thousands of Nairobi's urban poor were left homeless. Then in August, at least 10 commercial buildings on Nairobi's riverside land were torn down. Authorities say regardless of past permissions, they were built illegally on public land. Rights groups, however, are questioning the moves.
Flagrant disregard of illegal, of alleged substituting court orders, stopping the very actions of demolition or repossession. That such disregard of substituting court orders is counterproductive and undermine the rule of law in the eyes of law-abiding citizens and create a fertile ground for impunity to reign.
Atul Shah is managing director of Nakumat Holdings Limited, a supermarket chain that had one of its branches demolished. He says the demolition seemed random and poorly executed.
Start from point A, give everybody notices, enough time to do what they have to do to vacate. Today, as we speak here, we have goods inside, we have property inside. And why damage property?
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has called for prosecuting officials who approved the construction in the first place. He dismissed criticism of the destruction.
Demolishing properties that have been built on riparian land along our riverbeds, a scenario that many of you will note has resulted in flooding and other issues that make Nairobi uncomfortable.
More demolitions are expected in Kenya, and not just to remove buildings deemed illegal or to make way for growth. Kenya's National Construction Authority says 800 out of 5,000 audited buildings in the country are unsafe and should be torn down. Rael Ombuo for VOA News, Nairobi.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court will today, Wednesday, hear a petition brought by the country's main opposition movement for Democratic Change Alliance, seeking an overturn of the July 30th presidential election results, which the Electoral Commission said was won by incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa. But analysts said today's hearing hinges on a technicality that could derail the opposition's case. Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission has turned down a request filed by a civil society group to make public the assets of President George Weah and his vice president, Joe Howard Taylor. President Weah declared his assets last month, but Liberians were told that in order to know the details of the assets, they had to go to court. The request made by the People Action Network also demanded copies of the assets of legislators and cabinet members. Anti-Corruption Commission Chief Councillor James Verdier says while he supports the public's right to know the assets of public officials, only a court order can make that possible. And that's it for this Wednesday, August 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Border Crossings knows you want the hottest music, and we're here to give it to you.
Give me something nice and shiny.
Join host Larry London at 1500 Universal every weekday in August for your chance to win a copy of the new Now That's What I Call Music Volume 67 CD.
Music to my ears.
Featuring the biggest hits from Maroon 5.
Girls like you roll around with guys like me till sundown when I come through. I need a girl like
Selena Gomez.
No, I'd go back to you.
Post Malone, Cardi B, and more. This is your all-access pass to the biggest songs of the summer.
Hey, 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 special delivery.
Don't miss out on your chance to snag a free copy of Now 67 with different ways to win every weekday in August.
I'm the girl who's going to win the special prize at the end.
Well, you do seem confident, and confidence is key.
Only on Border Crossings.